My name is Janice. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater.
Hi,
Janice. Hi. I'm recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body, and grateful for that. Today, for the tape, today is March 6th, Saturday, March 6th. We're at the Big Country Intergroup Retreat in, Looters, Texas. Okay. Did y'all sleep well?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, I was awake half the night talking to y'all. And some people told me they were listening. So anyway, I'm excited to be here. I'm very grateful to be here. This is my calling, to be able to carry this message. Like I shared earlier, that I'm a channel. We're all channels. And we're here to channel spirituality, because that is what was channeled to these first alcoholics. And because of alcoholics, they channeled it to Overeaters Anonymous. And each one of us is a channel. You know, the prayer of St. Francis in the AA 12 and 12, Lord, make me a channel. And so, you know, I pray that often. There's a few things I want to talk about first. Do y'all have the little pocket reference? I encourage y'all to order this and have it available. It's very, very inexpensive. And have this with you. Have this with you at your meetings. And follow along. Follow along. There's a wealth of information in here. First of all, it tells us that this is a dangerous illness. It's dangerous. And no amount of willpower is going to help us. Okay? Another thing is, when there is italics in writings, it means that the author is wanting us to pay close attention to what it's saying. And in this piece of information, in the second paragraph, it tells us in italics, there is a proven, workable method by which we can arrest our illness. This is an arrestment of this disease. We're not cured. We are not. But we can be recovered. We can be recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body. And when the alcoholics talked about being recovered, it means they did not drink alcohol anymore. That's what that means. Another thing is, they talk about the guarantee. Can we guarantee you this recovery? And there's a lot of little, it's two letters, word in this statement. And the word is if. That is a condition word. If I do this, this will happen. If I do that, that will happen. If I eat compulsively, my disease is going to progress. If I abstain, I'm going to get these promises. I'll get this guarantee. It says that if you will honestly face the truth about yourself and the illness. You know, in your packet, you got the spiritual principles. And honesty is the spiritual principle in the first step. And so, you know, pay attention to these spiritual principles. I'll try to cover some of them today and tomorrow. But when you're reading your literature and everything, pay attention to what they're telling us about these spiritual principles. And the thing of it is, you know, the 12th step tells us that we need to practice these principles in all of our affairs. And so this is some of the principles they're talking about here also. And it also goes on to say, if you will keep coming back to meetings. You know, at the end we hear, keep coming back. I heard that my very first meeting, and I believed it. I'm still believing it, because I'm coming back. I go to two meetings a week in my town of Houma. We have two meetings, and I go to both of them. One's at 5:30 on Monday nights, and the other one is at 10:15 on Thursday morning. I love that, because part of my 12-step work is to carry the message. And it also says that we need to talk and listen. So I go to listen as well as to talk, you know. But it goes on with the if. So get this, have this handy, and study it. Okay? Those of you who may not know, it came from this book. That's where our invitation to you comes from. It's the first chapter in our Overeaters Anonymous book, our invitation to you. They left out, summarized it some, and they left out a few sentences or paragraphs, and I want to read a couple of them. It says, our members prove that compulsive overeaters can share their problems and help each other, thus benefiting not only themselves, but their families and the communities in which they live. The family can get healthy also. I heard somebody share that their spouse, you know, kind of fought them about coming to the program. I want to tell you, not very many spouses are too happy about it when we start changing. I know that at first when I started coming in, I came to OA, my husband was all excited because I was losing weight and I was looking cute, you know. And he liked that. But when I started going out of town, further and further, like, you know, I went like to New Orleans to a workshop, went to Baton Rouge, you know, went to those different kind of places and came back that night. That was okay. But when I started packing my suitcase and going off for a weekend, you know, that was a different story. That was a different story. And then when I started going out of state, that was a real different story, you know, like for almost a week or something like that. And so we went through a lot of trial and a lot of error in that. But you know what? God had a hold of me. God had a hold of me, and he wasn't going to let loose, and I wasn't going to let loose of God. You have to remember, I'm powered by gas. God, abstinence, and service. In that order. And so when I would go out of town and come back, it was like sometimes I didn't know whether Jimmy was going to be pulling me out of the car, or he'd be pouting, or he'd be under the covers not wanting to speak to me, you know, because it depended on how the mood struck him that weekend that I was gone. But I just kept hanging in there. I was no longer affected by anger in that kind of way, because I had recovered a lot from that. But it's my view that I think that that's why some people stop coming to OA, because they can't go through the fire. We've got to learn to go through the fire, whatever that may be. When I was in the program, five years, is when I went through the psychic change that the Big Book talks about, that entire psychic change. It took that long for me to get to that. It was like I became almost a nothing. It's when God really took my life. He took my life, and it scared my family tremendously. It scared them so bad, and it scared me also. It really scared me. But at that time, there was a lady and a husband that was in our lives, and the husband was in AA, and the woman was in OA. She's not in OA anymore. But I was so scared, and my husband was so scared. I called her and I asked her to bring me a Valium. And thank God she had enough sense not to. But they brought me fellowship. They came. And when I heard an AA speaker one time say that what God will use, he must first reduce to nothing. And I was reduced to nothing at that time in my life. And it scared my husband, and it really made my daughter mad. It made her really mad, you know, that would happen to me. But it's like all the anger inside of me from all my life just came gushing out. It came gushing out. And I know it had to be that way. But my husband took a week off of work, and he helped nurse me. I couldn't remember how to cook. I couldn't remember how to do anything. It didn't last long. It did not last long, but it did last a few days. It lasted a few days. And my husband nurtured me, and my kids nurtured me. And so I had been in long enough for them to know that how much this meant to me. It's hard to explain that, and I'm not doing it to scare anybody. I'm just telling you there's some fire that some of us must go through, and that was part of my fire that I had to go through. Because you have to understand, I was only 14 and a half years old when I met the man that I've been married to for almost 54 years. And, you know, I was a child. I was a child. And it's like I went from, you know, my mom to him. I didn't know myself. I really did not know myself. And I was 38 when I came into OA, and I finally started learning about myself. What I needed, what I wanted, you know, what I liked, what I didn't like. I always went by what I thought other people thought I should like. And so anyway, it didn't take long. I recovered from that, and now it's been really, really strong. But another thing is about my marriage and my life of my marriage in OA is that I did not want my husband at OA meetings. I did not. Because OA was the first thing that was ever mine. And I did not, he's not a compulsive overeater, he's not an alcoholic, and I did not want him questioning me about what was going on because I didn't understand myself. You know, and I didn't want him questioning me about what other people shared because, you know, that's anonymity. And so I didn't want him there. I did not want him there. When I was in the program 8 years, I was invited to speak at a workshop in Jennings, Louisiana, which is about 3 hours from Houma. And I invited him to come with me because they were putting me up in a hotel. And he worked in the oil field, and he used to work in Jennings when he was first, you know, when he was working there. And he knew a lot of people in Lake Arthur. And so I told him we could go visit those people and stuff like that. But that was like we were going to another destiny in our life. You know, there's been many destinies. The first destiny that I really knew I was going to was when I was 14 and a half years old and I walked 2 miles to go to my aunt's house to go to a dance. And that's the night I met Jimmy. He met me. And so the next one was the day I walked into Overeaters Anonymous. That was another destiny that I went towards. And so going to Jennings, Louisiana, 8 years into recovery was another destiny that I was going toward. Because I didn't mind Jimmy being in the room. And we kind of sat off to the side, he and I, and women were getting up and talking, and he heard the pain of these women and how much they needed OA. And he heard me, and he was sitting by me, and when I get ready to speak, there's an energy that comes around me, and he felt that energy. He felt that, you know, and he realized that what OA was. He didn't understand truly what OA was, how spiritual it was, and how much people with this disease really needed it, okay? But I had to be strong enough. I had to be strong enough, and my foundation had to be strong enough for me to be ready for that, to be ready for that. But backing up a little bit before that, one day I was laying across the bed, and he came into the bedroom, and he said, "Janice, you know what? I think if you had to choose between Overeaters Anonymous and me, you would choose OA." Man, I jumped out of that bed, got in his face. I said, "I want to tell you one thing right now. I don't have to choose. I can have both. Because Overeaters Anonymous is God to me. And I can have that and I can have you." He never said another word about that. But that, you know, those kinds of things did happen through my relationship with Overeaters Anonymous and my relationship with God. And we both just grew and grew and grew. And anyway, after we left Jennings that day, He stopped the car. He pulled off to the side of the road, and he said, "Janice, I want to tell you something right now." He said, "I'll never stand in your way again for you to do what you need to do." He said, "Because I know God is using you, and I'm going to help you pack your suitcase." So, I mean, you know, we just got to hang in there, stay in there. Just know that God is protecting and caring for us, because in how it works, right before the steps, it says we ask God's protection and care with complete abandon. And that was and is a prayer that I say often, because, you know, God, please protect me and care for me. Because you have to understand, in the third step, that's what I was doing, turning my will and my life over to the care of God, you know, the care of. So anyway, that's a little bit more about my life of recovery. But I got it all because of Overeaters Anonymous and the fellowship, because we're really a fellowship of the Spirit. And I really, really realized how much we were a fellowship of the Spirit. Around that time, I think it was like 4 years and 9 months that when I was going through that change, and that it was like people in Florida that was supporting me. I wasn't face to face with these people, but they were supporting me, and I started realizing that I could get support from all over. And now I understand that I have support all over the world. My world has really, really expanded. I have a really, really good friend in Puerto Rico. I want to tell y'all about some of her sayings to me, her little smart ass, you know. And I have a friend in Belgium, a really, really good friend in Belgium. And I have a picture of her when we went to the Dr. Bob's house. That's her. And I have some really good friends in Australia also, you know. So, I mean, these are people that I'm still in touch with. My name in OA is known around the world, especially those that were in, you know, World Service when I was trustee. I served as Region 8 trustee from 1992 to 1998. I served 3 years and I was reelected for the second term. That was a lonely time in my recovery, because after it's kind of like, you know, out of sight, out of mind a lot of times in people. And I wasn't getting as many phone calls. I wasn't getting as much mail. You know, I wasn't. That was before the computers was really, really popular as it is now. It was just starting. And so it was a lonely time for me. It was a lonely time for me after I wasn't a trustee. And so started, you know, I never stopped going to my meetings, but I got back involved in my inner group. I got back involved in my inner group. And also in 1992, Region 4 didn't have a trustee. They didn't have any applications that came into the World Service for Conference. And so I hadn't been to conference in 3 years after I wasn't Region 8 trustee. And before I even put my seat in the chair at conference, somebody kept saying, "Janice, why don't you put your application in to be the interim trustee for Region 4? And I thought, oh my, because, you know, after I wasn't trustee, I wonder, what am I going to do with all this knowledge? You know, I had the knowledge of the bylaws, the BRM, which is the Board Reference Manual, the policy. You know, I had studied all of that through those years and everything. What am I going to do with this? You know, but I came back home from that conference, and I talked to my then sponsor. She's dead now. I'll go into that later. But she said, "Janice, you just put your application in there." You know, so I put my application in. It's four of us. Four of us had put an application, and the first round of the votes, I was tied with another lady, and then they had another round of votes, and I got the nomination. They appointed me to be Region 4. So from 1992 to 1993, I was Region 4 trustee, and that gave me an opportunity to go up north, you know, to Minnesota and Kansas and Nebraska and all those states up there where it was really, really cold, you know, really cold. And it was in the winter, in January, that the first time I went up there, and I got in this guy's car, and my butt was real hot. He had heated seats. You know, that was an experience too, because now in South Louisiana, we don't need that, you know. So anyway, that was a good time in my life also. And about a year later, in 93, the end of 2003, Region 8 called me and wanted to know if I would step in as vice chair of Region 8. And I did for one assembly. And the next assembly was were voting to vote for vice chair of Region 8. And so I put in my application. There was three of us, and I got the election for vice chair. And so I served 4 years as vice chair of Region 8. So I've done a lot of service above, you know, the group level. And I'm very grateful. And it's like I was able to use my knowledge. I was able to continue to use my knowledge. Because they tell me knowledge is never wasted. It is never wasted. And now I'm a mentor for a lot of people, and sponsors for a lot of people who are in service. And so we just need to continue to give it away. And service has been, like I say, I'm powered by gas, God, abstinence, and service. And I'm grateful for that. But anyway, in this, our invitation to you and our Brown Overeaters Anonymous book, it says that we believe that no amount of willpower or self-determination could have saved us. Time without number, our resolutions and plans were shattered as we saw our individual resources fail. Our individual resources is not what's going to get this. We need to tap that unsuspected inner resource is which we identify with God within. That's where what we have to tap in to. It also says that we have discovered that if people in this program love us, it is not for our strength, but for our weakness and our willingness to share this with others. I loved the way the term willingness went through the room last night and how much that meant to everybody. And I'm going to go more into that as the day goes on. But, you know, the step six principle is willingness. Sometimes I think it should be the third step, but it's not. It's the sixth step. It's the way that they have put it down. Okay, after reading the personal stories in this book, you may proclaim, I'm not that bad. Italics, that. Once again, we ask you to keep in mind that compulsive overeating is a progressive illness. If the condition were, if you really are a compulsive overeater, the symptoms will grow worse. Within our ranks are those who are recovering but tried once again to control food by their own device. Tried. With consequent return to serious overeating and in many cases, massive weight gain. If you can identify with the developing pattern of overeating revealed in our stories, you probably are a compulsive overeater. The chances are that your symptoms will eventually reach those of the late stage compulsive overeater. In other words, you're not that bad yet. And you know, that's what I believe, that Overeaters Anonymous and my being able to find Overeaters Anonymous came up and hit my bottom. I did not have to go all the way down, and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that I found it. I'm grateful it found me. I'm grateful God led me to OA because I had been praying, and he led me there. And he led me there through an article in my hometown paper. That's how I found out about OA. Because I was at my bottom, diets weren't working anymore. I knew I couldn't take diet pills anymore. I found something more powerful. Okay, so we need to continue to, if you don't have this book, it's good information in there. It saves us. Okay, in the third, I'm reading from the fourth edition today. Some of you may still have the third edition, I'm not sure, but this is a quote from the third edition of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was a story, he who loses his life. He said, for I am happy. I thought I could never be happy. A happy man is not likely to do harm to another human being. Harm is done by sick people, as I was sick and doing dreadful harm to myself and to my loved ones. That's what I was doing. I was doing dreadful harm to myself and my loved ones. And so today, I know that I don't have to do that, and I'm grateful. I also know, you know, that I'm just a wave in the ocean. Just a wave in the ocean, going here, going there, going in, going out. And I also know that a diet is something I don't eat. And a plan of eating is what I eat. Someone once told me, you know, because I learn as much for people who go through the swinging door, that vicarious learning. I learn from that. I learn when people leave OA and they come back and they've developed into diabetes and they're having to go to the doctor and all that kind of stuff, and they more overweight than they were when they left. They're more overweight when they first came. I watch that. I really watch that. And I want to help them, but you can't help somebody that doesn't want to be helped. You cannot. So I just keep eating the things that is what I eat. I don't worry about being on a diet. I just know what I can eat. I know that I'm awake to enjoy every morsel of life. I am not here to just have the crumbs on a plate. It's much, much more. I know in service, my heart belongs to service. It really belongs to service. But it also belongs to the service to my husband and my family. And when God calls or OA calls, I do that service. I don't neglect my family. I may be away, but they know why I'm away, and they know where I am. And my husband, don't feel sorry for him. He never goes hungry. Because I'm a good Cajun cook, and I cook good Cajun food, but I eat the foods that I can eat. But I cook in quantity and quality, and I freeze the food. I freeze it in little containers. And all the man has to do is go in the refrigerator or freezer and get his food. And so I don't feel like I'm neglecting him in any way. And he can take care of himself. I didn't know that. He can wash dishes. He can keep the house clean. And one of the things that I should say demand... But one of the things that makes me the happiest is when I come home and I don't have a dish in the sink or a dish on the drain board, when my kitchen is ready for me to get back in it. And he knows that. And sometimes I might come in a little bit earlier than I was supposed to or told him, because sometimes I tell him 1 or 2 hours later that I'm going to be in case the plane is late or, you know, he's not sitting there worrying about what time I'm going to come in. And he said, oh, I was just getting ready to go clean the kitchen. So I have to give him a little leeway there, you know. But anyway, I'm grateful for that. But this is vital. another thing when we read our Voices of Recovery, you know, our first meditation book was This Far Today, and it came out in 1980. And this one came out in 2002. But this has the quotes from our OA literature. So I was still a trustee when we were working on this. And what this means is they want us to go to the literature that they're quoting for that day. This is a meditation book. You know, like it says that it's from the Overeaters Anonymous, page 173. It wants us to go to that and start studying what this is about and where this person got this information from. So, you know, our literature is so vital, so vital. It's hot in here. Y'all, mm-hmm. Is the heat, y'all hot in here? I know it's because I'm moving around. Okay. What I want to do right now is This is our Overeaters Anonymous 12 and 12. I want to share in step 12. I'm going to begin on page 103, talking about the spiritual principles. They're outlined in this book on page 103. And, you know, if you have your paper of the 12 steps, the promises of the 12 steps, there's a point that I really want to make here. And notice that all of the principles are in italics. So they're wanting us to pay attention to that. It says that on page 103, the 12 steps suggest that we continue to practice our new way of acting upon life and all of our affairs. And the vast experience of recovering compulsive overeaters confirmed the importance of this suggestion. As we've worked the first 11 steps, the principles embodied in them have begun to replace our old way of life, which centered on self and compulsive eating. In step 12, we confirm what we have turned our back on the old ways forever. We are moving in a new direction of spiritual growth. All of these steps are leading us more and more into spiritual growth, okay? What are some of the principles in each step that we are encouraged to practice in all of our affairs? In step one, it tells us that we learn the principle of honesty. And notice the word learn. We have to learn these things. We have to learn how to be honest. And to me, I have learned to be honest in degrees, more and more. Okay? It says that we learn the principle of honesty as we admitted our personal powerlessness over food and the fact that without help we could not successfully manage our own lives. Now we will want to continue being honest with ourselves and all of our affairs. One important way in which we practice honesty today is by admitting that we are still compulsive overeaters. I'm a compulsive overeater, I know that. I am a compulsive overeater, that's not going to change. But what has changed is that I have found help. I have found help, and I have found it in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, and I have found it through a power greater than me. God is, I understand God. And I still need this daily help. I need daily help. In step two, we learned hope. There's the word again. We learned how to have hope. As we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, the same hope will now need to underlie all of our actions. I have to have hope in all. You know, we started planning this retreat. Barbara started planning this retreat. She invited me to come. I hoped that I would be here, you know, and gradually, I hoped I would be here. And gradually, we hoped that you would be here. And you are. Y'all are here. And y'all look so pretty. I'm just so proud to look out at y'all. And so even in our loneliest hours, we can remind ourselves that of the great truth that we are not alone. We are not alone because God is supposed to be deep within us. And we need to tap that unsuspected resource deep within us. And we're not alone because we have a worldwide organization. We have people all over the world. And those of you who, you know, are just in this area, y'all have each other. Y'all have each other. And know that all over the world, people are praying for us as compulsive overeaters. Did y'all celebrate Unity Day last Saturday? You know, at 1:30 Central Time, people all over the world, whatever time it was in their time zone, were holding hands and praying for unity, for Overeaters Anonymous unity. Y'all think about those days of Overeaters Anonymous. It's the fourth Saturday in February is Unity Day. And Idea Day, which is International Day Experiencing Abstinence, is the Saturday before Thanksgiving. And a lot of groups get together to celebrate these times. And so, you know, learn more about the structure of Overeaters Anonymous. Learn more about the service. Know that we're not just this one individual person trying to recover on our own. So in our loneliest hours, we can remind ourselves of the great truth that we are not alone. Even in our weakest moments, we will find the strength we need if we believe. You know, the second step came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. There are many, many things that I need to believe about this program. And it comes from that principle. They don't have it written down as one of the principles, but I use believe as a principle, as a spiritual principle. Because a lot of times when things happen in my life, I need to believe that it's going to be all right. Jimmy had a first cousin that was Down syndrome. His name was Gayden, and he was born 5 months before me, and he died about 2 years ago, and it's very unusual for a Down syndrome to live that long, but he gave so much spirituality to the family and the world, and one of the things that he used to say was, it'd be all right. And you know, I say that, it'd be all right. It'd be all right. And he was like, Jimmy was 6 years older than him, and they were like brothers, because he was, Gayden was born in Jimmy's house, his mama's house. And so Jimmy was there when Gayden was born, and they lived there, because that was Jimmy's mama's youngest sister that had that baby, you know, and her and her husband lived there. But he gave a lot to the world, so you never know where truth is going to come from. And still, I share this with people I sponsor, and I share this when I speak, you know, it's just going to be all right. It'd be all right. Because I believe that. And in step three, we learned of faith. And another thing that I do, when I read my literature, when I see these spiritual principles, I underline them. I put in yellow, I put it in red, you know, I mark them on my book. I love this. I love to be able to write in a book. When I went to school, they said, don't write in your book. You got to pass it on to the next student. Don't dog ear your page. I can do anything I want to with this book. And I do. I mostly learn from it. But I also make my notes because I can't remember all of that. I took 2 years of substance abuse counseling courses, and what I learned there is that doctors and lawyers do not remember everything that they have in those books, but they know how to find it. And so that's what I have learned in OA. I know where to find the information. And it's through my years of studying. Okay? When I left home, I had all this in the suitcase. I said, this is so heavy. My husband said, that's because all that knowledge is in there. I said, I wish it was in here. You know, so I didn't have to bring all of this. But I know where to find it. Okay? And I have strong guys that helped me put that suitcase way up in the airplane thing. And I told him when I left home, I said, I sure hope I find a kind man that's going to help me with this suitcase. And I did. Big old tall guy. He was a steward up on the plane. But anyway, Jimmy said, all you have to do is blink your blue eyes at him. They're going to come running. So anyway, it's fun. Okay. But I have to learn faith as we made the most important decision we have ever made. The decision to trust God, okay? On this page, our second tradition, the spiritual principle is trust, okay? So I have to learn how to trust God. But then I have to start learning how to trust other people. And that's not easy. Because you know what? Some people are not trustworthy. And so God has to teach me and lead me and guide me and direct me to the people that I can start learning how to trust. Because I've been hurt in OA, and I've probably hurt others. But, you know, that's just the way I've been hurt through life. I've been hurt through OA, and I just got to keep practicing that principle of trust. So, no, when you study your tradition, when you study your second tradition, you can notice that we need to learn how to trust our trusted servants. We need to learn how to trust a loving God as we understand Him. The next in steps four, it tells us that in step five, we learn courage and integrity as we face the truth about our defects of character. Applying these principles of courage and integrity in all of our affairs means that we are no longer ruled by a fear of admitting our mistakes. That was hard for me, to be able to admit my mistakes. But today I know I need to in all my affairs. I need to admit my mistakes. It gives us the integrity to show the world our true selves. No longer needing to appear to the world as perfect people, we can live more fully having the courage to face up to our mistakes and to test our strengths in the challenges of life. I can't find it. When I find it, I'll talk about mistakes. Okay. In step six, it tells us that we learned more about the necessity of willingness. Now, you know, last night we have to be willing to be abstinent, not just trying to be abstinent. It's telling us here that it's necessary. Willingness is necessary. And we have to learn how necessary willingness is. In step six, we learn more about the necessity of willingness. I looked up the word necessity, as I do many, many words. It says it's the fact of being necessary, I must put my glasses on. It's when the words are little and the light's not very good, I have to use these. But otherwise, I'm doing really well. And the reason why I'm doing well is it's because I had the CK procedure done on my eye about 7 years ago. And it has worked really, really well. I have mono vision. They fixed the one I can see far, and this one I see close. But like I said, when it's little or not in the light, I have to use this. I have the best of both worlds, my doctor told me. He said, I can read my computer, I can see far, and I can read most of everything up close. So it was money well, well spent. But he did tell me I have the beginning of cataracts. But that's okay, because I've already gotten 7 years. And then when I have a cataract surgery in 2 or 3 or 4 years, ever how long it's going to take, I'm going to be able to really see good again, they tell me. My husband had it, and he had it about 3 years ago, I think, cataract. He had the CK procedure done also, but he developed cataracts. You know, he's 7 years older than me, so he developed cataracts and they put the lens in. So they can do some wonderful, wonderful things. But it says extreme need. That's what the word is, need. We understand the necessity, the extreme need to understand the necessity of eating. You know, even though we're compulsive overeaters, we still need to eat. Because the other side of that is anorexia. And so that's not what OA is about. It's about us being healthy and eating healthy and not starving ourselves. I don't need that. Okay, then it says that we apply this principle of willingness in many ways now, learning through each day's experience the difference between self-will and a simple willingness to cooperate with the guidance of a higher power. Now notice, the first six steps are telling us that we need to learn these spiritual principles, okay? Now, in step seven, it's telling us that we need to understand. We need to start understanding the meaning of humility. And you know, humility is, it means to achieve wholeness. It's for us to achieve wholeness. So we have to understand the meaning of humility, and we practice this principle of humility today by continuing to let go of status seeking and of thoughts and actions by which we belittle ourselves and others, and to humbly trust God. There's that principle of trust, Notice it's in this paragraph. For the removal of our shortcomings. Okay? In step three, where we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him, our life is our thought, our will is our thoughts, and our life is our actions. That's what we're turning over. We're turning over our thoughts and our actions. So right here in this reading, it's telling us that by continuing to let, we practice the principle of humility today by continuing to let go of status seeking and of thoughts and actions, of self-will and our actions that we take through our lives. Okay, in step 8 and 9, it's telling us that we have to look. We have to look at the damage we have done others and set about repairing it. Now we apply the same principle of self-discipline and love as for others to all of our actions. Self-discipline makes us less likely to hurt other people and quicker to make amends when we do. Practicing the principle of love, we have to learn how to love, is telling me here. I have to learn how to love. To accept others as they are, not as we would have them be. We're beginning to take this new attitude, but not just toward other OAs, but also toward those at home, at school, work, and in all areas of our lives. Slowly but surely, we find we are establishing the best possible relationships with each person we know. Slowly but surely. You know, just like in the spiritual experience, in the back of the big book, he said, some grow into it slowly, some, you know, quickly. Some may be quicker than others. Some are going to be slower than others. But this book is telling us that it's sure, if we keep practicing that principle of self-discipline and love. In step 10, it tells us that we discovered the value of perseverance. There's a value in perseverance. What I have learned what perseverance means is a sticking to a purpose, never giving up what one has set out to do. And that's why I keep persevering with Overeaters Anonymous, because what I started out to do, I started out to lose weight. And I'm persevering with trying to learn how to keep it off. That was my first perseverance, okay? It also emphasizes refusing to be discouraged by obstacles or difficulties but continually steady with courage and patience. And that's what I have done these last almost 32 years. I have not been discouraged by obstacles. Because, you know, the big book uses that word obstacles. Once each obstacle is, we go over each obstacle out of other, we continue to grow spiritually. And I have to continue steadily with courage and patience, because these disciplines are not easy. Then in step 11, we learned that we're going back to learning. We learned the principle of spiritual awareness as we turned our attention to the practice of prayer meditation. We practice this principle by seeking an awareness of God's presence in all of our affairs, by continuing to nurture our spiritual sensitivity through prayer and meditation. You know, the big book says that some of us are very sensitive. We're very sensitive. And it takes us a long time to outgrow this handicap. Being sensitive to what comes at us from the world has to be overcome in my part. But being spiritually sensitive is something that I need to continue cultivate. I need to continue to cultivate my spiritual sensitiveness. And the principle of service is the 12th step. It underlines OA's 12th step. Can now guide our actions both inside and outside the program. Here we experienced a great truth that when we let go of our need to control people and simply allow a higher power to serve others through us, we receive an abundance of joy and strength. You know, Overeaters Anonymous has taught me to be sure of myself. And just like other people in OA saw things in me that I didn't even know were there, and they helped develop that for me, so in my church, it's the same thing. We had a priest that was there for almost 35 years. That's too long, you know. But we got a new priest there. He was a darling. He didn't stay but 9 months, but that was another destiny that came into my life through that priest. I told him I was a member of Overeaters Anonymous. He said that he had started Codependence Anonymous in New Orleans before he had become a priest, and he wanted to know more about OA. So one day, I hardly ever go to the Stations of the Cross. Those of you who do not know what that is, during Lent, they have what's called the Stations of the Cross every Friday. For some reason, I just felt led to go to that Friday, and I hardly ever went. And I went that Friday, that first Friday of Lent, about 3 years ago. And when they got ready to serve communion, his name is Father Mike. Father Mike motioned for me to go up to the altar. And I said, "But I'm not a Eucharistic minister." And he said, "You are now." He just like pulled me out of the church and went. And I served communion that first day. He said, "The bishop will confirm you, but he said, I have the right to confirm you right now." And a couple of weeks later, he told Jimmy that he confirmed him to be a Eucharistic minister also. And so another thing is that there was this lady in church, and one day she came and asked me if I would be a lector. A lector is when you read the scriptures from the Bible at Mass and all. And I said, "Oh, but I'm not dressed." He said, "Do you want to read?" And so I got up there and I read the first time there. And I mean, you know, I'm grateful to that woman for pulling me out. You know, like just like OA pulled me out, my church is pulling me out. And so now I'm a lector in the church, and you know, we have a schedule, and when it's our turn, we serve. And I'm also a commentator in church. And what that is that you stand on the other side of the altar and you give the, not the readings, but the...
response.
No. It's information about what's going on in the week and welcoming the people and stuff like that. So, you know, I serve in those positions, and I feel like I'm giving service to my church community. And I'm grateful for that. And it's through what, you know, OA has taught me and the believing in myself and everything. And I'm grateful. And now we have a delightful little Cajun priest. He's only 33 years old, and he's been with us 3 years now. But he studied in Rome, and he's a smart, smart, smart man. And he's a great teacher. You know, and we just love him. And I like that that he's Cajun and he has that Cajun background, because I understand, you know, because I come from a Cajun background, and I just love to hear his little tales and stuff. But I asked him to pray for me before I left to come over here, and he prayed that God would bless me and, you know, and protect, bless me and all, so that I could come back stronger to serve around the table of the Lord. That touched me so deeply, you know, that we serve wherever we're needed. And I loved it, that prayer that he gave to me. Anyway, that's those spiritual principles. We have to learn them. We have to understand them. We have to practice them, and we need to know what they are. Okay, we can take a little break.